Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 375 for comics originally released on October 15th, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is Trinity of Sin number 1. Now, this, Drew, I think is a title they've been pretty much setting up almost since the beginning of the New 52. I mean, Pandora here was in almost every first issue they did initially. I think she might have been in all of them, she might have missed one, whatever. But then it was the one of the free comic book day ones, I guess a year later, like the DC Universe Zero or whatever it was, where we saw these three getting judged by the Council of Elders. And then we later got the Trinity of Sin, or the Trinity War or whatever in Justice League. So I think they've been building for this for a while. Were you really excited to read this before it came out?
Excited? No, I wasn't really excited. We had read some other Pandora stuff and hadn't really liked it, so I wasn't really jazzed that this was going to be great.
Fair enough. I can't say that I blame you. Did you read Trinity of Sin, Pandora, and or Phantom Stranger?
I sampled them, yes.
Sampled them, okay. I was reading them on a regular basis. I can see where sampling them was not a bad choice. They weren't bad titles, but they weren't brilliant titles either. And it's funny because this one I felt, particularly on the Phantom Stranger side of things, picked up where that series left off. I was a little displeased with this, how, I mean, we've got Pandora, Phantom Stranger, and The Question. Two had their own series, one didn't. For most of this issue, we've got three separate plot threads going. First The Question, then Phantom Stranger, then Pandora, and then it finally kind of dovetails there a bit at the end. They form kind of a non-team sort of a team, if that, and I think even that's being generous and a bit of a stretch. I really don't think they geared this as a true number one, because I don't think it was written for new readers or people kind of unfamiliar with this version of these characters. Would you agree, disagree?
Yeah, I can see that. It wasn't super accessible, and, you know, there's some stuff that's missing that, you know, I didn't feel, you know, I knew I was missing some things, and it was okay. You know, I didn't know The Question that well, so, but yeah, I can see that this is almost not really a number one, just picking up where they left off the last series. I can see that.
Other than the fact these three were judged at the same time, I really can't tell what, if any, connection has been really strongly established between them in the New 52. And there was none between The Question and Phantom Stranger before, and Pandora didn't exist before the New 52. End of Flashpoint, same thing. So I think this is, I think they're trying to make something here out of really not a whole lot. I struggled a little with this because I didn't come out of this thinking, wow, this is a great concept for a book, or, you know, I think it's a great reason for them to be united. I don't really understand why they are, and frankly, at this point, don't particularly care.
Do you think it could be some fan service for longtime DC readers who enjoy these characters? Some of these characters, you know, date back a long time and they maybe can't support their own book, but, you know, kind of rewarding those longtime readers and saying, here's some adventures with these guys, and kind of a give back, and we'll see how it goes.
I considered that, but I'm going to have to say absolutely not.
Okay.
The Phantom Stranger's reasonably close to the version he was pre-New 52. So that one, okay, I'll grant you that. But Pandora, again, didn't exist. She reminds me a lot of, I'm blanking on the character's name, from Wildcats. But it's not that character. And The Question, which I think also has a long history, is such a sufficiently different character and so almost ill-defined within the New 52 that I can't really say that what we see here is a give-back to fans of the classic Question run, either originally or later on, that I guess it was Denny O'Neil who was behind that or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was a great series, but that's certainly not this character. So I think it may have been intended as that, but as a longtime DC reader, I'm certainly not feeling it, or at least don't judge it that way myself. but I've never been a huge fan of the Phantom Stranger. I mean, I like the character okay, but it's not one that's like, ooh, he's in a book, I will go pick it up for that or something. Whereas The Question, actually, I probably would have. They did a lot with the original version, and then when they had the Renee Montoya version, I thought that was great too. I just thought this was a weak first issue. It failed to really sell me on the concept of the title, where the direction of where it's going to go and such. I don't think it was written for new readers, and as something that seemed almost predestined to happen, given the Trinity of Sin, Pandora, Trinity of Sin, Phantom Stranger series, and kind of essentially all the build-up towards this that they'd been doing, very disappointing.
Yeah, the art's not anything special. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's nothing special, so it's not really stand out there. The story was, you know, I guess you expect your first issue to say, here's character A, here's character B, here's character C, here's what they're all about, here's their powers, here's what a little bit of their backstory. It doesn't have to be a full origin, but you want a little bit of that, you know, in a first issue.
Yeah, an introduction to the characters.
That was gone. And then the story, you know, you can throw me straight in the middle of the story if it's a great story. And this really wasn't a great story. It had some elements that were interesting, but not enough to say, I can't wait till the next issue. In fact, I'm definitely not going to be sticking around for the next issue. It didn't do anything that a first issue should do. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it's disappointing. And on the upside, the title almost has nowhere to go but up. I think it probably will improve over time, just because it's be hard almost not to. Not that this is a horrible book. It's not. It's just unbelievably lackluster, I think, is the way to phrase it.
Yes.
And it's not one that I would say, oh, geez, you've got to stay away from it. It's complete waste of money. It's not that. I mean, there are going to be people who do like this if they're fans of Phantom Stranger, most likely, or this particular take on The Question. If you're a fan of The Question, there's better stuff to read, or the classic version at least. But there's nothing here I can really recommend.
No. Probably, you know, 8,000 to 12,000 units on this. I can see it selling, and maybe it might debut a little bit higher with a lot of stores stocking it, but it's going to level out right around there and die shortly after that. I can't see it going 12 issues. Can you?
No, certainly not. I'll be a little surprised if it goes 6.
Well, we got eight or nine for Green Team.
We usually get 8 or 9 for most things. Short run stuff at DC these days. I think if it comes, it wouldn't surprise me if it comes in somewhere around the 30,000 mark, loses half of that after this first issue, and plummets from there.
Yeah.
It's going to be one that, unless I'm mistaken and way out of touch with the mass readers out there, which is entirely possible, this just reeks of sinking like a stone, which is a shame because I'd like to see more of The Question. I don't think these are inherently bad characters or bad creators for that matter. This just seemed to be something that reeks of editorial dictate of, well, let's do this instead. And man, it was disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not ruling out that it could improve. Unfortunately, you'll have to tell me, because for me, it's a 2 and I'm bouncing.
I can understand that. I almost gave this a 3, but the more I think about it, it's like, I can't. It is definitely a 2. It is, I think, below average. For a first issue, they should have introduced the characters, assembled the team firmly, and given us a reason to come back for the next issue. Whereas this is, you're almost like lost coming in the middle of something. And if it had been right after the previous or the last issues of Pandora and Phantom Stranger, that might have helped. But with the Future's End stuff in between to give it a bit of a break, it seems like a non sequitur coming out of nowhere and just not gelling.
Yeah.
So disappointing. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
Now this is Death of Wolverine number 4. I'm going to go and say, let's go ahead and do full on spoiler warnings here, as if the Death of Wolverine name of the book itself doesn't kind of spoil a few things. I mean, hint, he dies, I think. But for this one, I think we got to go kind of whole hog, talk about some details of the story. And if anyone doesn't want to hear that, go read the book, then come back, or we've got the time codes. You can jump to our other book after this. I've been reading all 4 of these issues. I think Wolverine's a cool character, sometimes more so than others. This actually, I think, was the strongest issue of the miniseries by a wide margin. What were your thoughts on the previous issues?
I thought 1 was really good. 2 and 3 kind of spun their wheels a tad, and then this one brought it all home. I thought, all in all, a really solid miniseries.
I thought this gave a good send-off to Wolverine. I loved the bit when he finally, you know, encounters Cornelius, and he's like, you know, why are you doing all this? What's going on? And, you know, Cornelius is like, yes, I've done all this. Does the typical evil mad scientist sort of a monologue. And thank you for coming, Wolverine. I need your healing factor. And then we get this great page where Wolverine just takes one of his claws, scratches his other hand, slams it up against the window, and it continues to bleed. And Cornelius is like, oh, crap. You know, you don't have the healing factor. It's like, I got out of touch. Kind of the moment played beautifully. And I love those sorts of things.
That was the show don't tell.
Oh, yeah.
School of writing. And it was great. Yeah.
That's decompression done right. You could have done that in a single panel or two, but no, that's a serious story beat and turning point there for one of the characters, not Wolverine, alas. It played great, you know, and this issue had really strong art to begin with. I really enjoyed what they did. I'm not looking forward to Wolverine kind of being out of play for a while, but that was the decision they made. That's fine. This issue was, I think, the right sort of way to go about setting that up.
Yeah, I think Charles Soule, you know, obviously he writes so many books. He's pretty good. He's a pretty good writer, and I thought he did a great job with this. I thought the art was really strong, very detailed. The artist is who? Off the top of my head, it is
McNiven.
Steve McNiven. He did a great job, and has before, so and will again. But I thought that was great. I really, you know, I'm glad they didn't cop out. I like the way he died. He, you know, nobody really killed him, you know, but he did die. And I thought that was, it was well done. Well, it really, really worked.
Okay.
It really worked for me. It was satisfying, and I liked that.
Good. Part of the fun for me with these things is we know Wolverine's eventually going to come back. So part of it is kind of guessing how that's going to be, you know, crafting some theories on that or whatnot. But your comment of how he died and kind of definitively so, I want to offer another interpretation.
Oh, I'm not saying he's dead forever.
Oh, no, I'm not even saying. I guess what I'm saying is I don't think he's dead.
Right.
We get to the point where the color goes way heavy on the reds, and Wolverine pops his claws as these three other people are about to get infused with adamantium and spikes the tank and gets just covered with molten adamantium, and then injects them with the healing serum or regenerative serum or whatever, so they'll survive. And then goes after Cornelius and is kind of staggering out there, out onto the airfield as the molten adamantium cools as the sun sets and, you know, the night goes on, whatever. Yes, Wolverine doesn't have his healing factor. Now, it seems to me if you're going to, you know, have molten adamantium, it implies a little bit of a hot temperature. He's covered in metal. How can he breathe? So, yes, it seems like he dies, yet he makes it, I don't know, however far the door out of this thing is, a good, you know, ways down the airfield or whatever out there. I think he's just encased in metal. I am not convinced he is dead.
A la Han Solo and...
Yes. Thereabouts. I mean, look at the last page. Do you see a body? I think not. I think we see a body covered in metal. Could this somehow restart his healing factor over time because his body is used to adamantium? I don't know. But it seems like that's their out.
Well, yeah, but I mean, wouldn't... I mean, I've read some of the post-comics that's post his death, and they, you know, all his friends think he's dead, and they would have checked him out.
Until we see somebody examine this thing and determine something.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know. And I read the, what was it, the Logan Legacy that also came out this week after this.
Yeah, and the Wolverine and the X-Men. And
that one I haven't gotten to yet. I still got to
do that. And of course, Nightcrawler, which was last week.
certainly, everyone thinks he's dead, and for all intents and purposes, he may as well be. But it seems like they've got the opportunity to have played fair here. Even if he is dead in there, there's at least something there that they could, you know, salvage a few cells and reclone, or I don't know. But it's not something that is so telegraphed like the Johnny Storm death that this, to me, this played fair. It's a viable, yep, he's off stage, he's effectively dead, if not literally dead. Yet I can see ways they can bring him back that aren't crazy.
Yeah, I would hope And although we have yet to see it, I would hope that they would say they've, you know, went out and, oh my God, he's encased in him and made him and he's dead. And we've examined him and that's that. But I would hope that they didn't hear through the grapevine that he was dead and that's it. You know, they're all his friends. You would think they would investigate.
If we don't see some comic soon where we've got Tony Stark, Reed Richards, the Beast, everybody else they can think of with analyzing equipment or whatnot, the Vision kind of phasing through to see what's going on there, Ant-Man shrinking down to see if he can find a gap or, you know, through the adamantium, something. If they don't seriously study this abstract art he's now become, yeah, that's a missed opportunity. That's just silly. If they just, he must be dead. Come on.
Then that's exactly what it is that they just want it as an out. And, well, what you didn't see was 5 minutes later, he cracked through and then went away to hide for a little while and you know, evaluate his life or something. And he'll just make an appearance in 2 years.
I hope they continue to tell good stories here. I mean, I'm looking forward to Spider-Man being at the school instead of Wolverine.
Yeah, I think that'll be fun.
They've got three characters here that they kind of set up as potential fill-ins while Wolverine is gone. That could be fun. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. You know, with the death of Spider-Man, they earned some points with me as to how well they set that up and played off of that.
Now, you mentioned the Logan Legacy issue. Have you ever read an issue where throughout there were several references to future issues of said comic?
I thought that was kind of bizarre, to be honest.
I've never seen that.
I've seen a few where they reference something that comes out a month later, whatever. DC did that early on some of the new 52 stuff.
But not four or five issues. Four separate issues and different...
Well, of the same series.
Of the same series, yes. That was so weird.
Well, it was a blatant sales ploy. Here, let us tantalize you with what's going to happen in issues 2, 3, 4, and 5 or whatever.
Yeah, you don't know what this is. You don't know what this is. But it'll be an issue too.
Well, if you don't care about this character, but you like this one, skip the next issue. Pick up 3 though.
That was really strange.
It was like the sales department took over the footnotes. I thought it was bizarre, but we'll see if it works. The other thing I thought was a little odd on this one and made the issue feel a little short was we get a couple of pages of here's all the different various covers and crap like that. And really not all that many, but it felt like more when I read it the other night. The reflections from the creators, all that stuff. It felt like the story ended and there was too much in the book after that. Or too much of the book after that, of the comic. I was a little disappointed by that. But overall, fun stuff, good story. Again, McNiven art, hard to go wrong with that. Charles Soule told a really good story.
Yeah, I agree. This was a 4 for me, very strong. I liked it. I really liked the whole miniseries, and it made me do some of the epilogue stories that were in, like, Wolverine and the X-Men and Nightcrawler. So it actually kind of got me back into some of those that I had dropped, which is a win for Marvel, you know.
No, that is good.
You know, that's a reader they didn't have before. How long I stick around, I don't know, but I really enjoyed some of them. I thought they did a good job. The Logan's Legacy I thought was pretty weak, but you know, this did a good job to get me excited about Wolverine and the X-Men, and you know, make me want to see what they have to say about their dearly departed friend in their issues, and I wouldn't have done that otherwise. So in that instance, it really worked as a mini event crossover.
Well, I mean, just because it's a blatant sales ploy doesn't mean they can't tell good stories and get the benefit from that.
Right.
You know, the Nightcrawler stuff we talked about last week, excellent issue. There's a lot they can milk this for successfully in terms of how characters feel, all that kind of stuff. And they showed with Superior Spider-Man that they could do that for quite some time, setting up some great stories for when the character does come back.
I'm assuming we'll relaunch Wolverine and the X-Men as Spider-Man and the X-Men.
Yes.
With a number one.
Yep.
And we think we'll get 24 issues out of that before they bring Wolverine back?
That seems a little high to me.
Okay. You think they maybe a year then?
Well, 24 issues could be a year, depending how fast they pump them out, too.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm expecting we're going to go through all of 2015 without Wolverine.
Right.
If he comes back sooner, I'm okay with that. Again, cool character. But we'll see what happens.
We'll be done with the funeral and eulogy issues by the end of this year, though, and we'll have a full year with him gone.
That's my expectation.
Yeah, yeah.
At the Toronto Fan Fest, Fan Expo, actually, Charles Soule was there at the Marvel panel and had basically said, you know, obviously he's writing this and a ton of other stuff. None of the meetings had he been in, had they even started to talk about how do they bring him back. So as far as he was concerned, the character is off the table. And he was very upfront. Yes, of course, eventually he'll come back. It's comics, you know? He's too good of a character to leave dead. But there's no rush, and they've got a lot of ideas of what to do in the meanwhile.
Now, issue one sold 250,000 copies. Then it went in half for issue two. Do we expect it to pick back up in 3 and 4?
I don't expect it to pick up with 3, but I do expect 4 to pick up.
So people that want to say, okay, how did he die?
Yep.
I gotta know. And you think it won't get up to 250,000 though, will it?
Probably not. It's hard to tell.
Definitely over 100,000, I would guess.
Oh, certainly over 100,000. I think that's a given. But I could see it going either way.
Yeah.
The other thing that helped the first issue, and Sam and I talked about that on the episode I recorded with him 2 nights ago. It'll go up as we record this tomorrow, but last Friday, as people listen to this, time travel is a wonderful thing. The first issue of Death of Wolverine had just a ton of covers, including some a one in 500 variant, a 1 in 100 variant, all sorts of things. So they went all out.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, but it's a big deal killing the character off, even if it's just for a while. Which is a good thing. If they do these stunts and nobody cares, and it's like this sold 60,000 or something, it's like, ooh, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah.
Fun stuff, like I said, looking forward to seeing how they replace all of those titles that he's been in and just fill the void that, you know, is open because he's not there.
Yeah, exactly.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Did you give it a 4?
Oh, yeah. I gave that a 4. Strong 4.
Okay.
Thanks for reminding me. I had forgotten to actually mention that.
It sounded 4-ish.
It was 4-ish. It wasn't quite 5-ish, but again, they did what they set out to do, and they did it well.
Yeah.
So now
I'm ready.
Moving on to the other book. We had talked about Doctor Who a little while ago, so now we're going to talk about Doctor Who, the 12th Doctor, number 1. We covered the 11th and 10th Doctor number 1s about 2 months ago. You were not a big fan of Doctor Who or whatever kind of prior to that. That seemed to open the door for you into the stuff.
Yeah.
Have you been watching any of the stuff that's on BBC with the Peter Capaldi Doctor?
I am working on the wife, and she's not against it wholeheartedly, you know, going back and reading and watching some of those. She's working her way from the beginning, which I don't really have any interest in.
Which beginning?
She's going back to, you know, six episode seasons, blah, you know, way back.
Oh, like 50 years ago almost.
Yeah.
Kind of. Wow.
Yeah.
That's
so
hardcore.
When she catches up to like season, that was the 10th, 9th or 10th Doctor, whenever it kind of rebooted.
Eccleston with the 9th, yeah.
Yeah.
I would say go with the 8th.
I'm going to hop in then.
The advantage of the 8th is that was the TV movie they did for Fox back in the 90s.
Yeah.
So for an hour and a half, you get another Doctor.
So, yeah. So
okay.
I was hoping we could just hop in and check out a season. But there's a plan that has to be in place. And she's going to start. She's already like up to like 6, I think.
Wow.
So she's been moving on it. But we're still not there yet.
Okay. So this is your introduction to this Doctor.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. And Clara, for that matter.
Yes.
All right. I've been...
Who seemed well established.
She was a companion with Matt Smith for a while and was a big to-do in how some of those things ended. She was in the 50th anniversary. So she's actually better established than the Peter Capaldi Doctor.
They usually reboot both the Doctor and the companion, right?
As for usually, I don't know any of the old Doctor Who. I got on with the Chris Eccleston Doctor with the reboot or relaunch. Obviously, since it was a new startup, he got a new companion. Rose carried over first season with Tennant. When Tennant left, we got both a new Doctor and a new companion, and then that companion got replaced, so we had one companion kind of bridge the gap. I think what they tend to do in a lot of cases is have a companion or two, you know, whatever they've got, bridge the gap to kind of not be a complete clean break. And I think that's smart because when they shifted from David Tennant to Matt Smith, and we changed doctors, companions, and showrunners, I was very much, you know, hey, if I don't like this Matt Smith fellow or the new companion, maybe I'm out of here. And Tennant had a couple of different companions. Rose when he started, then Donna Noble, and then Martha Jones. Maybe I got Martha and Donna backwards. I think it was that way. Anyways, having Clara kind of bridge the gap between the 11th and 12th Doctors, I think smooths things over for a lot of viewers, such as myself. And I'll be honest, it's taken me a good couple of episodes to get used to Capaldi as the Doctor. You know, I'm liking the episodes, but on the TV series, I think Clara has been the main protagonist of the season by a wide margin, not the Doctor. So I was a little curious here who was going to be the hero and who was going to be the sidekick, if you will. They did a better job here with the Doctor being the lead and Clara being the companion. And they did a good job with the likenesses, by and large. The art was good. There were a couple of places, and maybe it was just me, it seemed like the proportions were a little off. The head was a little too big for the body or something like that, but not distractingly so or cartoony-like. But this series not starting off like the other two did in the comics with, okay, let's get a new companion, gave this a bit of a different dynamic. And given how quickly they got this out compared to how recently the episodes with him have aired, granted they wrote him and shot him a while back, they've done phenomenally well capturing the sound of the dialogue and the nature of the characters. Now, as your first introduction to this Doctor, what'd you think?
He seemed a little more gruff than the other Doctors we are interested in, or we had reviewed back in the last batch,
mm-hmm.
and more so than the Tom Baker Doctor that I know. And so I thought that was interesting, a different kind of take. But I really I thought it was just as good as those previous two comics that we read, and I thought it was maybe even a little better. I really liked the open where, you know, we'll kind of get introduced to this world a little bit, and then mm-hmm. before we meet the doctor and the companion, I thought that worked really well. And I just thought it was a really solid first issue.
I would agree with that. They covered a lot of ground, both establishing the Doctor and the companion in this issue, and the whole setup. What I found kind of ironic is this is a first part of a multi-part story. I don't know how many issues it's going to go, at least two. But I find that ironic, given that the Capaldi season of Doctor Who so far has been entirely kind of done in one episodes. So, and I don't have any problem with them expanding this beyond a single issue, particularly given how much they did in this issue. It wasn't just, oh, let's land and oh, there's going to be a story. I mean, they get, you know, the pacing of this made me feel it was the halfway point, not the first 20% of the story or something.
Yeah, definitely felt like part one of two and not part one of five.
Yeah. As for him being a more gruff doctor, I think the best way to kind of elaborate on that is in one of the episodes, he introduces Clara as his caretaker, or she gets introduced and says, yeah, I'm his caretaker or whatever, his carer. And he says, yes, she cares, so I don't have to.
Ah.
He is very much like his social skills did not make it through the regeneration. He is brusque, rude, condescending at times. And that's, I think, part of why it takes a little while. It took me a while to kind of warm up to him as the Doctor. He's not the fun-loving guy that we've had for the last two.
Yeah.
There
are a ton of variant covers on this.
Yes.
They actually give them to you, at least little pieces, little postage stamp size examples of them in the back, and they really went all out on this issue, more mm-hmm. so I think than the 10th and the 11th. And you know, my hat's off to Titan Comics, because we really kind of got into them a little bit with Number Cruncher
mm-hmm.
and some of the other things that they did. And you know, they were really kind of a little scrappy company, and they went out and they bought this license, and I think they're handling it really well. And they're on the map. I think they're kind of a really interesting publisher that can do both cool, you know, miniseries, you know, lure creators over to do some creator owned stuff, and you know, some, and then do a licensed property like this really well. They're really, really, really doing a good job.
I agree entirely. They seem to, I mean, they've been publishing for a good couple of years, but in the last year or so, they've really gotten very serious about it, I think. Number Cruncher, of course, we loved, was great stuff. And you're right, the way they've picked up this license and run with it. I'll be honest, when I heard they were doing two concurrent titles with the third common and stuff, I'm like, wow, that's aggressive. They're going to do a mini-series with the Ninth Doctor, starting off the program of mini-series for all of those, which, aggressive, but I think is cool. And they've come through with the goods. You know, I don't think I've read anything by them I thought, wow, this wasn't that good. They've told, you know, for three different Doctors right now, I think very successful stories that captured the tone, the style, and feel of that actor, that version of the Doctor, you know, that period of the character. I'd like to see them branch out, do more comics of other things, but I don't want them to branch out further than they're capable of doing so, and I'd love to see Torchwood, Sarah Jane Adventures, or some of the other stuff peripheral around this as well. They're definitely a publisher that went from who are they to definitely being on my radar, you know, in a very good way of all other things being equal. If a title were to, a miniseries were to come out from them or just some random publisher also in the back half, I might pass on the random publisher version, but from them, I'd give it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of times I shy away from something from Dynamite. I've had some bad run with most of the Dynamite things, with some rare exceptions. Mm-hmm. And so, but if the same title on Dynamite or on Titan, I'm going to give Titan the benefit of the doubt because I've had a really good experience with, like, a run of their stuff. You know, Death Sentence was really good, too. I mean, they've really put out some interesting stuff.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You know, I like how they do these cover galleries in the back.
Yeah.
I think any publisher that does multiple covers and stuff should be almost obligated or required to do this. And I think it's in their best interests because, frankly, this has me thinking I should go check out the GameStop website to see if I can get that cover of the Doctor, because it's a happy birthday with a birthday cake, and the candles are the different versions of the Doctor. It's almost microscopic on this image, but it looked cool.
It's probably, if it's a GameStop variant, you're probably only going to be able to get it with points, I'm guessing.
Yeah, probably. Oh, well, won't bother.
But they might do something else, though.
It's nice being able to see all of these different ones.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are variations on a theme. And that's okay, but it is cool to be able to just glance at all of them and see who all of the sponsors are, you know? You know, these just comic shops that are getting their own specific variant cover, which I think is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the Strange Adventures one because it almost looks like it's a reverse angle on one of the other Doctors posing with a weeping angel. And then the ones for Gifts for Geek is based on one of the episodes they did on the new series.
Oh, okay.
Time Heist, I think it was. So, I mean, they've got some good concepts for the covers as well. For me, this was very much a 4 out of 5. It was a great read. I think fans of the series and the new Doctor will definitely enjoy it. And again, they're continuing to do great stuff.
It's also a 4 out of 5 for me, and people who don't watch the series can enjoy this. It's fun sci-fi. It's kind of a little bit of Flash Gordon in it, you know, mm-hmm. A little bit of Starlight, it's fun. And I had no problem, you know. They give you enough at the very beginning to give you a Doctor Who 101 primer on what everything is, and then you have no problem following along, and it's all really interesting characters that I thought I liked right away. I felt, you know, I liked their chemistry, and I liked the adventure they were on, so it was fun.
Cool. When they do the Ninth Doctor miniseries, we may want to review that first issue and stuff, just to see if they can continue knocking it out of the park the way they've been doing.
Yeah.
So I have been taking care of comics that were straggling on previous weeks or whatnot. I've read most, but not all of the stuff this week. A lot of good stuff, just in general. I am looking forward to a week or two out being a smaller week, because I've had a few other things that are eating up some time. Did you read anything that was particularly exciting this time around?
This was a really slow week for me. There wasn't that much. You know, Batman Eternal was good.
Mm-hmm.
Batman and Robin, so much time had passed between...
Yeah.
The last issue and this issue with all the breaks, I had totally forgotten what was going on, and it took me a while to, even figure out what they were trying to, what story they were trying to tell. So that was a little disappointing. That story has lost a lot of momentum for me, and I've really enjoyed it for a long time. It was one of my favorites, and it's lost a lot. So I'm hoping they can right the ship on that soon. I don't know if you felt the same or not.
I did, and I think just the, like you said, the time frame it's been told at. I mean, this particular one, because of the gap, because of Future's End, slowed the story down, broke the momentum. But even so, this had been getting doled out. The story was kind of spinning directly out of the previous arc in Batman And, which had the stages of grief and whatnot. So it's been so long since Damian died. They're going through all of this stuff. Can they get the body back? Can they do something about it? You know, whatever. We've been in this title, we've been getting a variation on this story for about a year now. And it's not a bad story, but it's almost exceeding my attention span.
Yeah.
And I think if they had told aspects of it faster, that might have helped.
And then everything I read in Marvel was either Death of Wolverine event related, Edge of Spider-Verse event related, or what's the other one?
Original Sin.
Original Sin, yeah. And so there was nothing that, well, I take that back. Miles Morales, Ultimate Spider-Man was not in any of those.
True.
But I mean, everything else was part of some event, and I thought that was interesting. I'm really liking the Edge of Spider-Verse stuff, though. I'm all in on that. I'm really enjoying everything they're doing there, even though sometimes they make a couple missteps and have some really weird stories. But it's still really cool, and it's building to something, and I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Well, it's Crisis on Infinite Spider-Man.
There you go.
And, you know, I'm loving aspects of it where it's the JLA-JSA kind of a crossover, if you will, between Spider-Man. There have been, like you said, a few missteps, a few, well, I don't know if I'd have gone that way, but by and large, it's doing really well. It's fun. I'm looking forward to it going full swing.
Oh, and the Axis stuff. The Axis crossovers.
Yeah. Axis continues to be interesting. It just surprises me how much marquee stuff, I guess would be the way to put it, is going on over at Marvel these days.
Yeah.
Spider-Verse, Original Sin winding down. There's just, so much of that.
I guess Daredevil was also not related, which was nice.
True.
And more about the purple kids.
Yeah,
the purple kids, and it was just an okay issue. One of the ones that didn't really stand out to me in a long run of great Daredevil issues. So he can have just an average issue every once in a while.
For me, it was still above average, but I'll admit it was not one of the best he's done. But he's also, I mean, Wade's been knocking it out of the park over there for so long.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's I wouldn't say it was a complete misstep.
Oh no, definitely.
Yeah. What else was it? Fantastic Four actually was a better issue than I was expecting. That's a title that's been kind of floundering a little in my eyes.
This is one I want to hop on because they're going to be ending this down the road, mm-hmm. and they're going to go back to the original numbering, and they're going to build to this end. So I think I want to hop on and finish it up. Because it's been a while since I've read Fantastic Four, about a year or two.
Okay.
And so what's going on now? Is it something that they're in the middle of the story arc, or are they near the end? Because I'd really like to hop on this series.
I don't know where they are at in how much more of this arc is going on, but the basic gist is things have fallen apart for them. Reed and Sue have had the kids taken away because they were endangering them. Johnny's lost his powers. Ben's been put in prison. And some of the people around them, you know, She-Hulk, Quiet Wingfoot, and a few others are realizing, hey, wait a sec. People can have bad luck, but this is a little crazy. Those court cases went really fast, almost like they were ready for them. So is somebody, you know, put plans into place? And if so, who and what can be done about it? So they've, by doing that, they've been able to tell what's almost were seeming like one-off kinds of things, not one-off literally, but shorter stories of, oh, Johnny's lost his powers, oh, Ben's going to jail, and then you're realizing it's building to this bigger thing. So I think there are a lot of places that are good jumping on points if you're willing to kind of hit the ground running, and I think number 11 was one of those.
Okay.
Because it kind of pulls in She-Hulk, Wyatt, and gives you an inroad into what's going on.
Yeah, because in the Loki issue, mm-hmm. you know, I saw Valeria was there with Dr. Doom, and so that intrigued me. And I thought, well, maybe there's something going over in Fantastic Four that would explain this. So I'll...
For that, read the annual that came out a week or two back. Because Sue goes over to Latveria to go get Valeria, and you read in Loki, she's still there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a good issue. I think you'd love it because Valeria's front and center in there.
She's a great character.
Oh, yeah. They're doing some good stuff with the Fantastic Four. It's just that title, this volume of that title kind of floundered a little bit. And I'm sure I've said it before, but the red costumes, red uniforms they had this time that came out of nowhere just felt off. I mean, this team is usually blue. You know, they've got their colors. They're, you know, maybe black and white or whatever. But the red gave it a darker vibe in a weird sense that just seemed off-putting.
Yeah.
Enough so that they're actually changing the costumes back in an upcoming issue.
Now, this is a series that when it goes dormant, I could see going on the shelf for 2 years.
I could see, for a year. I can't see 2 years.
I think that shareholder at Marvel...
Ike Perlmutter, I think it is.
Yeah, really, really wants it going for a little while. And I could see it happening. I could see it staying away for a couple of years.
I could see it for certainly a minimum of 6 months. Lead up to the movie. Movie comes out. Lead up to the DVD. DVD comes out. Let it all cool off. Get kind of forgotten. Then bring it back. So like 9 months at least. But I think if you go for a 2-year stretch, by the time you'd bring it back, it'd be in time for a sequel to the movie. And that seems like bad timing.
You have to do it all over again.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, it's quite possible the movie does gangbusters, and then they relaunch a Fantastic Four with an African-American Torch, you know, to kind of get in line with the movie. That'd be kind of neat.
Would be interesting. And certainly if it's successful, there's no reason they wouldn't try to leverage that, even though they don't want to go in the other direction.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy. The comic is not selling anywhere near well enough to have any influence on the movie.
The only thing I can think of is their contract must not be as lucrative for them as the Sony deal is with Spider-Man. They just must really be getting hosed on the Fantastic Four.
Sony seems to at least be willing to talk to them about Spider-Man, maybe using him in the Avengers and stuff like that, from what I've heard. Whereas I don't think such talks are happening with Fox, which is where the Fantastic Four is, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Fantastic Four. I think and X-Men and all the mutants and...
I think Marvel Studios just wants those characters back, but because of the contract where it's, you know, hey, if you're successful, keep going. But that comes down to, is a really bad contract then.
Yeah, and then also Fox played a little dirty pool. They put out a low-budget Fantastic Four movie just to keep the license.
I wouldn't say it was low-budget. That implies a budget. That was one that was a Roger Corman film, and he is known for give him 2 weeks and a couple of bucks, and he'll give you a movie. And I've seen that Fantastic Four movie.
And?
And, yeah, it was no budget. I mean, the effects were cheesy. Not even cheesy. They weren't that good. It was like a foam suit for the thing. It's something that you would have expected back in the 60s in terms of visual quality and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
It was disappointing. But it was also very much, like you said, do the movie to keep the rights.
Yeah.
But that's the deal. If they keep doing the movies, they keep the rights. And apparently there's not much Marvel can do about that. Maybe now with Disney lawyers on their side, that'll change. But it would be cool if they could at least get the studios to cooperate and not have conflicting versions of you know, Quicksilver and stuff like that. Get to where they can build up a cohesive Marvel universe in the movies, much like Marvel Studios has done with the parts they've got.
Agreed. I'm interested to see how James Robinson finishes this up, though. And you know, I think he's a really good writer.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Earth 2 stuff he kind of lost me on as it went on, but. I hope that he can tell a really good end to this story, at least a temporary end. And I think, yeah, I'll go back, grab the annual then, and I'll just start now.
Yeah, I think that's a good jumping on point. I hope they put the character, if they're able to park the Fantastic Four in a place where it makes sense for them to either part ways or go be part of the Avengers or go be something else, but not overblown, pretentious, oh, we'll never get back together again. It's like, come on, they're gonna. You know, again, like the Wolverine stuff, they gave a good, it's over, he's done for now. But if they had basically atomized him and there's no way he could possibly come back and, you know, tried to tie it with a bow if it's impossible, that would have annoyed me because it's just, dude, they're going to bring him back. The Fantastic Four, Marvel, it's one of the core properties for the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
You know, so if you want to put it off out of sight for a bit, go back to the Future Foundation, fine, whatever, I don't care. But don't pretend it's something it's not. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Oh, that'll do it.
Cool. Just a quick reminder about the preview spotlight. All the online solicits for the major publishers are up at Comic Book Resources. I'll update the forum with links to that by the time this episode goes up. And if I haven't, somebody remind me. Also, the Diamond website should be up to date with all of the new information and the DCBS one shortly thereafter. Please send in your clips, post on the forum. You guys have been doing an awesome job lately of some really great picks. I'm loving hearing about these things. You guys are selling me on a number of things. And you guys are also getting these things in well before the deadline, which again, November 8th, Saturday morning. Normally these days I'm getting them by like Thursday. I've got enough to know how much I've got to do for the episode and all that. I really, really appreciate that. You guys are helping me make those episodes just a wild success, and thank you. So please, if you've got something you're interested in that's in the current round of solicits, just send a short clip in, say what you like, where it is, what the publisher is, why somebody should pick it up. Join us next week as we discuss Deathstroke number 1 from DC, She-Hulk number 9 from Marvel, and Five Ghosts, The Haunting of Fabian Gray number 13 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.